Good evening, one and all. Yes, here we go. Halfway through May. It's going really quick. I mean, it is. The older you get, the quicker it goes. As I said before, it's like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you go through it. But it is. It's already, say, nearly halfway through the year. But I must tell you, as I told my guest, it's actually been pretty good here in Connecticut where I am. It's been, I think, sort of upper 60s, something like that, talking about even 80 by the end of the week. So you never know. It could be spring or summer, whatever's here. I know the grass is growing as you're sitting here watching it. But anyway, I am here and so is my guest. Now, one of the things that you'd really notice coming over from you know, UK or from Europe, in fact, when you come to America, is the American TV. One could say that the Puritans came here in 1482, and judging by the American television, the Puritans are still here. You know, somebody in a bikini, they fuzz the backside out and stuff like that. And this is coming from a person who sort of was raised in a continent where topless bathing is the norm, and even full frontal on children's TV and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, has it always been like that? Well, no, it hasn't. You go back to 1850s, 1860s, burlesque was brought to America from Britain. I think it was a lady called Lydia Thompson and the British Blondes. Sounds good, didn't it? That brought it here. And of course, it was all the rage going through the 20s, 30s, etc. like that. And then it sort of phased out. But it is making a comeback as neo burlesque or new burlesque. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to find out a bit more about that, because my guest today, she's written a book that can tell us all about this sort of thing. So on the show today, I have the one and only Lynn Sally. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure, Lynn. Pleasure, dear. I'm not going to call you Dr. Lynn Sally. I'm just going to call you Lynn, if you don't mind. Otherwise, I'll get so confused, and it's very easy to get me confused at my age. But it's good to have you on the show. What introduced you to neo or new burlesque in the first place?
Well, I have to tell you, you've got your history down just right. Lydia Thompson and the British Blondes brought what later would be known as American burlesque to the United States, New York in particular, in 1868.
Wow.
And so, believe
close.
It or not, yeah, no, you were right on. And believe it or not, I actually studied this in graduate school. So my area of expertise is what I call lowbrow popular culture. So those kind of fun, down and dirty, the things that might not be at the museum, and it might not be at the ballet or the opera or those quote unquote places of higher culture.
Right.
But that's how people like to be entertained. And you're right, burlesque was really, really popular. And so I studied burlesque in relationship to a lot of other popular culture things such as vaudeville and world fairs. Early cinema was also part of my studies.
Yeah.
And I just started thinking about how I'm really interested in looking at how people seek to be entertained, because it tells me a lot about the culture. So I studied burlesque in graduate school. I was living in New York City, and quite frankly, started getting involved on the other side, on the stage side, as a performer, as a producer. Later, I started teaching burlesque at New York University. So I teach college students how to think critically about burlesque and how to take their clothes off for college credit, but don't tell their parents.
Right. It's interesting because, you know, when people think of burlesque, you know, you think of perhaps fan dancing and stuff like that, but it was a lot more than that, wasn't it? It was sort of like almost like pantomime in a way, because you had ladies performing men's roles and, you know, taking the mick out of traditional theatrical things and sort of really outlandish costumes and that. Well, to my mind, that's very pantomime as we have in the UK sort of thing. But, you know, there was a lot more risque type stuff with it. I guess the Follies would sort of come from it, were they? Is that how that went into it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that your contextualizing of that is spot on. So when folks go to pantomime in the UK, everyone can go because it's family friendly. The kids might not get the double entendres, yes. But the parents do. And I think that's true for less, too. So they have a lot in common. Things are obviously the trajectory of entertainment in the UK is slightly different from the United States, but absolutely you are right. When those leg shows combined with the literary form of burlesque, which is parody, all burlesque is a subset of literary parody. So it inverts form and content. And all that means is it just makes that like high culture, it makes fun of high culture and it brings it down and it elevates low culture and sort of makes it more lofty than it is. And that's where the humor comes from with burlesque, is that everything kind of gets thrown on its head. And one of the things that was super interesting, but also very controversial about the Blondes, as you mentioned, is that the women played men's roles. And so that allowed for a lot of things, an inversion of gender, but also the women got to wear men's costumes, which exposed their ankles. And so that was all very shocking. But when those two things kind of came together, the leg shows and the literary component, that's when American burlesque was born. So you're right that it has influences from all of these different places. And they kind of came together and they just percolated and bubbled over. And Americans ate up that UK porridge with a giant spoon. They were so into it.
Interesting, because you go back to like Shakespeare's time and stuff like that. It was the opposite. It was the men all playing the women's role. I mean, you know, there was no women in Shakespeare's plays. It was younger men playing the women's roles in his plays. And yet, when burlesque came along, it was the reverse. It was women hadn't been allowed to do that, and all of a sudden, you know, it was shocking. These people are allowed to go on the stage and sing and as you say, vaudeville and stuff like that. Sort of phased off, but then it did restart. It did sort of pick up. And interesting, you said you're in New York, because wasn't that where it? Where's that thing I wrote down? Blue Angel Cabaret, 1994. Is that sort of one of the main things where it all started? The neo burlesque started.
Yeah. So many people argue that burlesque went away, and the historical time period that people talk about that is like in the 1960s when the sexual revolution came. And, you know, quite frankly, you could see more at a festival or a concert than you could at a burlesque stage. So more has just kind of changed. But I argue that burlesque never really went away. It went into different forms. And so one of the forms that you're absolutely right, the Blue Angel was a very early avant-garde nightlife that that many people argue that was was one of the first neo-burlesque shows in New York City. But if you look a couple decades earlier at what was happening in nightclubs, especially in the late 1960s and early 70s, and this is something that I'm doing research on right now, you'll see burlesque type things at nightclubs. So you have someone like Karen Finley, who is a performance artist, but who, you know, would come on stage at the Limelight at 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, rip off her prom dress and smear chocolate all over her body, you know, which is a very sort of famous performance art piece that she did, you know, but she's at a nightclub and it's 2-3 o'clock in the morning. The crowd's going wild. If you look at the history of neo-burlesque, technically neo-burlesque hadn't emerged yet. So there are places, little places in which these little remnants of burlesque sensibility have always been around. But the neo scene, as you're describing it, I think that you're right on that the Blue Angel is really one of those important historical moments in New York that it started to emerge.
See, obviously, you know, you think of it as a sexual thing, as you say, back in, you know, when you got to 60s, 70s and, you know, likes of Hair and everything was that in the theatre and everything was at festivals and everything. But it's more than that, isn't it? I mean, it's like a cabaret with, I guess, like, you know, almost circus skills sometimes in it, and the humour and the parody and that sort of thing. You know, people don't think of it these days as that sort of thing, you know, as the outlandish costumes, going back to the pantomime sort of thing as well. But it's not just the striptease, is it? It's a lot more than that.
Absolutely. I think of striptease as a performance tool, right? One of many that performers use. So as you say, there are performers that come from a broad variety of training and background. So you have performers who are circus artists, you have opera singers, you have ballet dancers, you have a lot of actors. And then you just have like a lot of misfits that might not have fit into one of the categories that were offered to them. Maybe they didn't want to perform on a cruise ship, or you know, the very many offers, the limited offers that we have as performance artists. And so burlesque provides this really amazing, unique medium in which you get to do everything. You are the choreographer. You create your costumes. If you don't make the costumes yourself, you design them, or you come up with a concept and then get someone who can actually craft it to help you. Performers are their own producers. They book their own shows. They're their own directors. They oftentimes cut their own music. They promote themselves. So it's really this unique thing for someone who has that kind of personality, who just wants to kind of be in control and be in the driver's seat and put their own, whatever they have in their mind, whatever vision they have, to be able to fully control that and put that on stage to screaming, adoring, drunk crowds. If that's your thing, then burlesque is a good fit for you.
And it's not just these days. It's not just women, because you've got, is it boylesque? Which is, I guess, where the sort of men and drag queens and stuff like that would perhaps be part of.
Yeah, so there's a lot of offshoots now. There's boylesque. There's something called nerdlesque, which is specifically, it's kind of like making fun of nerd culture.
Yeah, my mind had pictures when you said that.
Like nerdlesque is very specifically based in popular culture. So, if they do, a Star Trek show, people will come and look for the authenticity of the references and things like that. There's burlesque, there's gorelesque. So there's all these offshoots, but to me, they're all neo-burlesque. And the reason being is that the neo, which, as you said at the beginning of the show, means new, but it comes from the Greek, and it also means a revival or a shift. And that's what I think is really interesting, is there is a slight shift. There is a modern sensibility and bringing humor, over-the-top aesthetics, to politics, to contemporary events, to things that are happening. And so that's what, to me, makes it all under this umbrella. And technically, boylesque is a category, and we're sort of moving to this post-gender world. So to me, it's not necessarily reducible to your biology or your genitals, because there are assigned female at birth performers who identify as boylesque performers, right? Okay. So it's not reducible to that. It's more about how you present the image that you're trying to put forth on stage, and how you achieve that.
In your book, which is what we're here to talk about, that we've been doing a lot in the background stuff, Neo-Burlesque, Striptease as Transformation, which came out, I think, October last year, if I remember right. One of the things that you do go through and sort of talk about is how you got started yourself as a burlesque dancer. Was that just, what actually drove you down, took you down that path, not drove you down that path?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I was in graduate school at the time, and I had a really good friend who had joined up with Angie Pontani, and they created this group called the Pontani Sisters, and they were like, hey, want to be a cigarette girl at one of our shows? And I was like, sure, because this is always an extension of what I did, dressing up and putting on wigs and eyelashes and lots of makeup and dancing around the living room for my friends. I started identifying as a female drag queen when I was in college. And everybody told me that, you know, you can't be a drag queen because you're a woman. And I was just attracted to this, like, over the top. So, so I just started getting involved in the scene. I remember very specifically, I was working for a professor, and I snuck into his office, and I was grading papers, and then I had to get into drag. We call it getting, you know, putting your makeup on, getting into drag. And I remember getting into drag in his office and like scraping all of the glitter off of his desk into a garbage can and just thinking, oh my God, I hope he does not find out what I've been doing in his office. So for me, all those things just kind of came together at the same time. They were just, the neo scene in New York City was just really, really starting to emerge and bubble up. And I just got involved at the very beginning, not only on stage, but also in the classroom.
So when you took it, you know, as a subject, was it something that anybody had ever done before?
Well, I'm never going to be the person that says nothing's ever been done before. There is a burlesque performer, a legend back from the day, who actually had her PhD. She didn't study burlesque per se. So I don't want to say no one's ever done it before. But when I proposed a class on burlesque at New York University, I want to say it was 2004. I had to do a lot of searching because there wasn't a lot written on the neo scene. There's a beautiful book called Horrible Prettiness by Robert Allen, but that had been published in 1991, which means he had done his research in the 80s. And so, you know, there were no other institutions that were teaching entire classes on it. You might get a theater studies class that mentions burlesque, or you might get a women's studies class that talks about pinups or showgirls or things like that, but not a whole comprehensive class. And so as the years have gone by, it's been very, very exciting because there's more scholarship coming out. There's faculty members and graduate students who are working on this, and it's still taboo. So you talk about the Puritans in America today, and that is no joke. People get fired for doing burlesque. It's really shocking to me.
It used to be 70s, 80s. I mean, it used to be Sunday lunchtime down the, you know, down whatever pub it was, and you had strippers on the pool table, and that was the Sunday lunchtime. You know, it's just, you know, you're in there with families and everything like that. But it is totally different the way it's pretty, you know, looked at between the Europe and America. You know, still is, as you say. One of the things that as you've been pointing out, I mean, it doesn't have to be what gender or anything like that you are. But one of the good things, or the things that burlesque allows you or allows the performers, is basically to get attention to themselves without shrinking from like, you know, the insecurities and everything like that. You put the false, as you said, the wig and the false eyelashes and stuff like that on. You're somebody else. You're not you. You're not you with the, you know, the inhibitions and everything like that. You become somebody else that can do whatever they want. And I guess that's one of the big pluses about it.
Yeah, you got it right on the head with that one. I mean, it's almost like putting on a, you know, superhero cape and just getting on stage and turning into this other creature that's larger than life. And that's unapologetic. And I think that that's one thing that's really important, because burlesque has been noted. And of course, it's changed over the years, and expectations and styles have changed. But, you know, you don't necessarily have to be what mainstream society would think of as physically of the appropriate stature to get on a stage and take your clothes off. I'll just put it that way. So it's like a celebration of whoever you are, whatever stage you're at, and that's celebrated, as opposed to, as you sort of hinted at, shrinking or covering up or apologizing for how you look. It's like, slap some glitter, you know, on whatever body you have and put it in the spotlight for all to see.
Exactly. And one of the things that it does do is reminds me of a puppet thing we had. Well, I think we still got this come back again. Had a thing called Spitting Image, which was like a puppet thing, but based on the news, but totally irreverent to everybody. Everybody had the whatever taken out of it. But that's the thing now with burlesque is, of course, you get this chance to poke fun at any sort of trending topics or whatever goes on, because you're not, you know, that's not a real person. That's the character that's there on the stage. I'm sitting here thinking, I remember go back to, totally changed it. So you're back in the, must have been in the 70s, early 70s. I was at I don't know if it was a stag show or whatever. I don't know what it, can't remember what it was. But this lady came on, you said about, you know, people being different. This lady came on all in diamonds and tiaras, hair piled up and everything like that, and did an opera song. And then she went to go on and explain about what she was going to do, the art of ventriloquism and the frying the voice and stuff like that. And she was very prim and very proper. But when the dummy opened its mouth, it was the most foul-mouthed thing you could imagine. And it was just so funny that you saw this very prim, proper woman in a tiara and a long evening dress and everything like that. And the dummy's mouth was absolutely filthy. And you're looking at the two and you don't realize that it's the same person.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely burlesque at its core. That sort of, like, you know, upending,
yeah,
of here's this proper woman, and then her mannequin, which we all know is really her,
yeah,
is this completely filthy and foul-mouthed. I think that's very burlesque.
It was very, very much so. So the book came out October. What sort of response have you received from it?
Well, it's been great so far. It definitely is a readable book. It's published by Rutgers University Press. Uh-huh. So it is scholarly. It's sound in terms of scholarship. There are lots and lots of footnotes, but you don't have to read those if you don't want to. But yeah, it's been, I like to call each chapter a love letter to the performer that I'm talking about. So these are very focused case studies. It's not a comprehensive history. It is not pan-geographical. It does not get into every single scene, but instead it's seven focused chapters with a lengthy introduction and a preface and a conclusion. I mean, each chapter focuses on a different performer. And something that I think is sort of like interesting or compelling about burlesque. And so people really are enjoying each chapter. Tells like a different story. And I worked real hard on making it readable and approachable for most readers. And so that's been important to me. So yeah, it's been going great.
So you've got a chapter on Dirty Martini, do you?
I do. Dirty Martini is... She's an amazing performer based in New York City, but travels the world. And she's currently on tour with Dita Von Teese in Europe.
Yep,
along with Kate Valentine, who actually narrated my audiobook. Kate Valentine,
nice.
Also known as Miss Astrid, was a very important and is a very important burlesque figure. And she was around the time of the Blue Angel. So a little bit later, but a couple years later, but she basically was one of the first producers, an important female producer in New York, and also a host. And she is the one that brought all of these amazing creatures together for a show called the Va Va Voom Room. It also had an outpost out in San Francisco. So she was flying across the country, putting on these amazing shows. And Miss Astrid right now is hosting Dita Von Teese's show. So a lot of the people I talk about are still performing. This is a live performance art. It lives today, it continues today, and it continues to grow. And so it's a very vital art form.
Okay, well, We've learned a lot. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure a lot of other people have learned a lot, as not just with growing, how it is growing, but the art form that it is and how you've managed to share with us everything. But what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show over to you so that you can tell everybody where other people can find more about yourself and, of course, about your book.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, of course, you can buy the book anywhere that books are sold, but we strongly recommend that you order it directly from Rutgers University Press. So you can go to my website. It's lynnsally.com. So it's my name, LynnSally.com. And you can find all the links for the audiobook, if you want to order the physical book. And the website also has links to a few articles I've written. I mentioned earlier how I identified as a female drag queen. So there's an article that appeared in the Gay and Lesbian Review about a different kind of coming out, and this dream I had of becoming a drag queen when I was in college. So you can see some of my writings and keep in touch with me on social media. Instagram is my favorite medium. So you can find my author page at Lynn K. Sally on Instagram, or if you want to follow Lucky, which is my stage name, you can find me at Dr. Lucky Travels.
There
so those
go.
Are our handles, yeah. Well, so I look forward to keeping in touch with everyone.
Lynn, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. Really enjoyed it. Very interesting, very entertaining. And I'm sure a lot of people who read your book will find the same. So thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Dr. Lynn Lucky. Or Dr. Lucky, Sally, Lynn Sally, Dr. Lucky in the middle. But talking about her book, Neo Burlesque, Striptease as Transformation. And hey, we've learned a lot. I've learned a lot, I know. And I'm sure a lot of you out there, you know, what is actually going on these days in that sort of thing. And she said, these people still touring and everything like that. Really going good. Very interesting that people, how you can do and, you know, the escapism that it becomes and everything like that. And the entertainment that there is. Let's face it is, after all, a form of entertainment and a lot of people really enjoying it. Well, that's the end of the show today. I'll be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.